to Rhys Sweeney. Today, 22nd of March 2012, I'm interviewing Ross Craig today. We're interviewing Ross at Austral Bowling Club.
So Ross, what's your full name?
Ross Edward Craik.
How do you spell that last name?
C-R-A-I-K.
And what's your date of birth and place of birth?
23rd of June 1941 at Peterson, New South Wales.
And your father's full name?
Was just simply Colin Craik, C-O-L-I-N, Craik, C-R-A-I-K.
Do you know what his date of birth was, or his year? Or
He was born on the 1st of August in 1908.
You know where?
I don't know where. I don't know where. I'd say he spent most of his early days in Glebe.
And your mother?
Mother was Gladys Shoemaker, S-C-H-U-M-A-C-H-E-R, and she was born in Tent Hill on the 25th of January 1911.
Do you have any siblings?
I had one sister, Joan, who was... She was born in Sydney also, and she passed away at the age of 70.
We drove here and we passed Craig Avenue. How did that come about?
My father came to Austral in 1945, and in 1948, or December 1948, was the amalgamation of part of Penrith, Camden, part of Camden and Liverpool Council. He'd become an alderman on Liverpool Council and served on that body from 1948 to 1956. And subsequently they named Craik Park, which was opposite where he built a house, and of course Craik Avenue, which runs off 15th Avenue at the what they used to call Bosnich's Hill, because Tom Bosnich lived opposite that place.
And were you an alderman as well?
No, I wasn't an alderman. I served... I did stand for alderman on two occasions, but was unsuccessful. But I served for 15 years on Liverpool as a director of Liverpool Hospital. And I did work for the council for some 12 years in 1960 to 1972.
So can we talk about your father for a little bit and his journey to Austral?
His journey, he was living in Leichhardt at the time, and he, after the war, as the war concluded, he decided to buy a poultry farm out in the Austral area. I think he went home and told his wife that he had bought the farm off a family called Millen. Emmy Millen owned the farm, and Dad bought it from her. That was in 4th Avenue between 11th and 10th Avenue. Subsequent to that, he became an alderman and then served on as president of Liverpool Rotary Club in 1952. Dad's farm was the third biggest in the area behind Teagle's and the famous Ingham farm at Casilla.
What do you remember? What sort of, how many sheds did he have, or what type of, how many chickens?
He had a place where he kept the day-old chickens. He had about 12 sheds in total. They were all made of asbestos fibre, and later on he built two intensive care sheds. Before that, all the chickens were free range, all the poultry was free range. He built two intensive care sheds where they were all in the one place. They weren't in cages, but they were all in the one confined space.
So what type of, how many chooks? That's a lot of chickens.
He had about 11,000, or the capacity of the farm was 11,000. Also, during that period, he was breeding horses. He bred trotting horses. And I think at one stage he had about 30-odd horses running on the property. He had acquired the original farm for 24 acres, another adjoining vacant land of 14 acres, and down the back paddock was 100 acres, which he bought off the Grimsons, who they were well known in Liverpool as the behind Liverpool Timber and Hardware at that time.
What do you remember about the poultry farm? What did you used to do on the poultry farm?
I used to collect the eggs because it was a laying, mainly all laying birds that he had. And then we'd collect the eggs and they'd go up and my mother and my grandmother would put them into boxes and send them to the market. So Maurice Scott Irving was a carrier in those days that used to pick the eggs up at Austral and take them down to Sydney for sale.
You might just wait for a minute until this guy shuts up. Okay, we might just go do that again if you don't mind. I'll cut that out because his voice was very loud.
Loud. Yeah, we used to collect the eggs. We had probably three other people working on the farm, but my grandmother and mother, who the grandmother lived with us, they used to pack the eggs into boxes, and Molly Scott Irving used to take them down to the to Sydney to the markets. Dad also had some private customers on the way that he used to deal with himself and take eggs to hamburger places and so on.
How were they boxed in, like when you just said they were putting boxes?
In wooden boxes, on sheet or on trays that were placed in wooden boxes.
Was there any technology or was it all manual?
It was all manual in those days. Everything was before computers came in. I don't know what they do today. But
what about your water? How was that? Did you have a dam on the property?
No, we had a creek running through the back, which was drinking water for the horses and what have you, but the only water we used was water from the Sydney supply.
So how profitable was the poultry farm? Did you deal with the egg board?
We did, yeah, it was the egg board in New South Wales in those days. So the farm was obviously run at a profit. My father had other interests in Sydney. He was a bookmaker and but the farm used to supplement his income from that source.
Do you know what your quota was with the boar? That would have changed probably, is
it? Yeah, there was quotas. I can't recall what the exact quota was.
So he bred horses. Do you know who bought his horses? Or did he buy them for did he breed them for racing?
He bred them for racing, and that's how he got coming. He had four broodmares in total, and he virtually kept all the offspring of those mares. And he bred some good ones. He had Austral Sky, Austral Pride, Chilgrit. They were the main three that won races in the Sydney area. And probably he was a member of the New South Wales Trotting Club, and they used to race at Harold Park, which is now defunct, and their headquarters have moved to an angle.
So when you're thinking, did he How were the horses bred? Do you remember the technology? Was it the old-fashioned way, or was it AI, or what?
No, it was the old-fashioned way. He mainly used the sire, which the chap that he was involved with, Lyle Wallace, raced a horse called Sky Raider, and most of the stock, the mares went to Sky Raider at some stage or other. He also used Lawn Derby but he kept all the offspring until he got too many horses around him, and I think the first time he sent his horses, or the only time he sent his horses to market, he topped the yearling sale with a filly foal that never won a race, and he sold another one, Tennessee Lex, for a very small amount, and it went on to win 30 races in Sydney.
Who were some of his colleagues in the racing industry? Do you remember any characters?
Probably when you look back on it, the Charlie Swaddling, who had a transport business, and I think it still exists in Glebe. But probably his closest ally was Bill Lyon, who lived in Kelly Street, Austral. He also had a poultry farm, and he became president of the New South Wales Trotting Club at one stage.
You mentioned this family opposite the bowling club.
Yes, that was...
What family was that?
And what Dudley, Jack Dudley was the person that built the house over there. He was married to a Jane Ashford, but if you look through some of the records of Austral, the family of Ashfords were one of the original families. It was spelled A-Y-S-H-F-O-R-D, and there were four in that family, and Jack Dudley owned it up until the mid-50s, which he sold it then. But Jack Dudley went on, he was a shoe manufacturer in Sydney, and he went on to build a place opposite the bowling club on the 9th Avenue side, and then he sold that and he moved up into 8th Avenue, so all in total there were three. He also owned the land where the Scalabrini Village is today, and he had a polo field down there, one of the purchasers of Tingewick. The original home was Alf Phillips, who was well known in the trotting industry, and he built a trotting track down there before he sold it to Dick Willis, who later on sold it to Scalabrini Village.
Do you remember polo being played?
Yes, I remember polo. There was two things. Polo was played down there. Jack Dudley used to had something like 40 horses, and he built the stables on the property of Tingewick.
And they're the stables we can see today.
Yeah, they're still there. The stables at the back of Tingewick, we can still see. The other thing was that in the early 50s, they used to have an Austral show, which was down on the flat in Edmondson Avenue, not on a polo field, but on a field just on, it would have been on the 8th Avenue, on the opposite side of 8th Avenue, where they had a show, and Chief Little Wolf, who was well known as a professional wrestler, came out to the show one time. My sister was very keen on wrestling, and I think Chief Little Wolf was picked up with Dad's car.
Do you remember what Chief Little Wolf looked like?
Yeah, I can still see him, and he's with his head band, and he was a big, solid man, and he was a very good wrestler in that era, in the 50s.
And what did he do? Did he wrestle the locals, or was there a...
Oh, yeah, it was just he put on a show, and that was it. And I don't think it was me. There was other, his name comes to mind, but there was other wrestlers there that they put on a show.
What else was there at the show?
Just the general sideshows and what have you.
Produce
and so on, yeah.
Do you remember who would come to the polo? Like, how far was that reach?
I don't remember exactly, but I know that most of the people came from the Sydney metropolitan area to play polo. Sometimes teams would come from other parts of the state to play polo on the Austral fields.
How much land did you mentioned the pockets, so at the before the landscape changed for your family, how much land did he occupy here?
He had somewhere in the vicinity of, he had 100 acres, 24 acres, 14 acres, that's 138, another 15-acre block. So he had around 160 acres all told.
Did you ride horses yourself?
I rode horses. I always had horses, but I didn't compete in any shows. I just used them for pleasure around our own properties and what have you. I noticed in one of your film clips that you had Max Dunbeer, and I bought a horse in 1949 off Max and his father called Raffles, that he had won in a raffle. But
Do you remember how much you paid for it?
I think it was £20 in those days. And they laid it out, Max laid it out from Liverpool where they had it, out to our place at Austral. There was always a story which Max loves to tell, that when they bought it, he said to the father, said, which half of the horse do you want, the front half or the back half? And I said, the front half. He said, oh, well, that's good. He said, because you'll have to feed it and I'll get all the manure out the back. So that was just a funny aside.
Do you remember the iceworks?
Yeah, I remember the iceworks. They're on the site where McGrath Mitsubishi is now, which later Max had a Chrysler dealership up there. But yeah, I remember the iceworks. And
you remember them delivering?
Remember them delivering, yeah, yeah.
How did the landscape look out here when you were young?
Well,
who were the families? And
there was a lot of families that I recall.
You've got some notes there.
Yeah, I've got some notes. I got some families.
I can make some notes of those later.
Talk
about some of the families there.
Well, on the corner of 12th Avenue, there was the Riley's one side, which they had about 7 or 8 children, and on the other side was Scott's, who I think had 4 or 5 children. Bob Scott used to drive for my father. He had a radio home business as well, and Bob Scott. There was another family which was associated somewhat with Dudley's, called Jim and Pearl York, which were in 9th Avenue, and that was the last house that Jack Dudley purchased.
What was that name you just said? Can you spell that?
U-A-R-T. Jack Dudley eventually ended up buying that and adding on to it from a small fibro house to a mansion, which he seemed to like plenty of space and bigger tables and what have you. There's Chica Wannell, who's still alive today. Harold Watson, who had a place just in 12th Avenue. The bus proprietor in those days was Seth Scott, that lived on the top of the cutting. He had his buses up there.
When you say this man, Wannell, what did he do?
He worked for us as a farmhand, and he eventually bought 3 acres off Dad, and he built his, I think he's built 3 houses on the same property, but lives in the last one. Both him and his wife are still alive, and they're in their 90s now. Getting back to Dudley's, John Allen, who, and John and Graham Allen were his 2 nephews who he looked after an unfortunate accident with their father, left a single mother who was one of the, who was Jane Dudley's sister, Priya. There's one other name that I noticed seemed to be missing from your correspondence on the matter, or your clip on the film clip on the matter, and that was Dave Wiskich, who I think came to Leppington on Binjali Road, and he arrived in the early in 1940, in the 1940s, and he was a person that he carted most of the produce from all the farmers that were around to the markets. He's still alive. He was 85 this year, and his son Peter is the mainstay of the business now.
I have been meaning to. I did invite Peter to the other week, but I've got to speak to Dave. There's no doubt about it. He's on the list.
Yeah. Well, I've got his phone number, which I can give you later on. I think that's about all.
All right, we'll have a look at that after we finish the recording, and I'll make some notes. So there were only a few families here.
There wasn't many. It became a lot, over the years, as 3 acre lots were able to be sold and built on. Well, then you've seen, a doubling. I think the population now is in the 2800s. But in those days, it would have been less than 100. When we first moved out here, it was a bit of a culture shock to my mother, although she was born in the country, had been living in the city from some time in Leichhardt, where both my grandmothers had corner shops in Leichhardt. One was both on the same street, Excelsior Street in Leichhardt.
So let's talk about you for a bit.
Yep.
So, Ross?
I was born in 1941.
Hang on a tick. There's some static coming through. It might be from your watch, I don't know. Okay. So we've got your date of birth.
Yeah.
What was it like growing up here as a young man?
Oh, it was tremendous because, as I said before, we had my grandmother living with us, and my mother's mother lived at Austral in the same house. And
is that your mobile in your pocket?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what it is. I've got mine down here. That's what's picking up. Sorry. We'll just get that again. Okay, so
my mother's mother lived with us on the farm in Austral, and was probably the principal babysitter, which allowed Mum and Dad to go to the various functions that they had to in Liverpool and so on. My other grandmother lived at Lewisham. And every year we go up to the entrance for a holiday, and the two grandmothers would come up there with Dad and Mum and Jane and myself. I went to Austral Public School from first to fifth class, And then in sixth class in primary, I went, was fortunate enough that my father sent me to Newington College, where I completed the leaving certificate in 1958.
So how would you get there? Let's talk about the journey.
The journey, well, we were always running late. My mother would have to chase the bus into Liverpool, and then after catching the bus to Liverpool, I used to go by train to Stanmore every day, which was a pretty long way, but I think it was worthwhile. For about 15 months I was a boarder in New England, and I probably regret now that I wasn't a boarder right through until the leaving certificate. After that I went to work at Liverpool Council and worked there for 12 years. I then freelanced as an accountant. I had a livestock carrying business, and in 1978 I became secretary manager of Austral Bowling Club. And then at the conclusion of that, I more or less done freelance accounting, and then I went to work for a firm in the city, and once again had to travel every day from Austral, which I was living in Austral back in those days, and I used to drive into Kent Street, Sydney to A.J. Williams and Company, and I did that for 20 odd years before I retired in 1962. As far as other activities, I was the president of the Austral Progress Association for about 10 years in the 80s and 90s. I served on Liverpool Hospital for 15 years from 68 to 83. And in 1987, I spent a couple of years at Ingleburn, and then after that I went in 2007, I went to Foster to live, and that's where I'm living today.
So can I take you back to Liverpool Council?
Yep.
So what major projects can you comment on that you were overseeing at that time? So what was...
I was accountant at Liverpool Council. The swimming pool had just been built on the corner of Copeland Street and Memorial Avenue, and that was probably the biggest project for some time. The council outgrew the area and they put a second story on the council in those days. And of course, in that period, Green Valley was just coming into its own, where they had plans for, in the 60s, I think there was a population of something like 25,000 people in the valley.
So let's talk about each of those things a little bit. So the baths, do you remember how much they cost, roughly?
No, I don't. I'd only be guessing.
Anything that stand out about that project from where...
Well, it received a lot of use in those days. I don't know how much use it gets. Probably doesn't get as much use today as it did back in when it was first built.
It's actually gone now.
Yeah, that's right. It's gone and made the new swimming pool was built. And the old swimming pool was, well, it's vacant land at the present. I don't know what plans the council have got for it. But
was that tendered out, or did council literally build it?
No, council, it was tendered out, yeah.
Do you know who built it?
No, I don't.
So what do you remember about Green Valley? What were some of the things that were...
the main thing I remember was when the CEC mission came to Green Valley. You know, we had the shopping centre and then the library, Green Valley Library was built in that period. And then the CEC mission built a little bit down the road from the hall and library. And, you know, once again, I think it's the whole concept has changed where they seem to be putting up high-rise development in a lot of areas in Green Valley, which is pretty much in keeping with the whole of Sydney. I think when you look at Liverpool itself, it has changed completely, whereas houses have now been replaced by up to 6 to 7 storey buildings, and I don't know, it's just not the same. In the area out in Austral, you had the Italians and Yugoslavs principally, whereas now in Liverpool you have got the Asian peoples, the Indians, and you name it. And whereas in the old Liverpool you could walk down the main street and know every second person, today they're all from other nationalities and you wouldn't know a soul.
Who were some of your key friends at that point when you were in council?
I worked, as I say, as accountant. One of the people that come to mind is Morris Tillich, who I understand is now one of your sponsors, or major sponsor. He came and worked there at Liverpool Council for 4 years under me, and it's great to see that how he has progressed today with his home. He's really made he's probably one of the big success stories of Liverpool, really. Max Dunbier, of course, I was always friendly with Max. He went to Newington as well in those days.
Are you the same age, roundabout?
Oh, give or take a couple of years. I think Max was 2 years older than I was.
Now, when we were driving here, you talked about suburbs and who owned the farms. Can we just retrace? We were driving along Hoxton Park Road.
On the corner of Banks and Hoxton Park Road and Whitford Road was a chap by the name of Basil Hughes, which mainly they were cattle dealers. He was there with a rather large holding. The next major holding was Nelson Phillips, who had Woodside, which is now fully developed as Hinchinbrook. Going further on, Hinchinbrook itself was a 2,000-acre property and it was managed by Joe Prendergast. And my father did at one stage try to buy it, but it just couldn't raise the finance that was required to buy a 2,000-acre property. And Cecil Hills was next door, which is another historic property in that area that has now been redeveloped completely for housing. I don't think Hinchinbrook, the original Hinchinbrook, has got some houses fronting Cowpasture Road, but has not been developed as much as the Woodside and the property owned by Basil Hughes. That's about all.
So where did you go after council with Liverpool? Anything more to talk about Green Valley? Like how was council raising its revenue?
Well, through rates, naturally, they always raise their main, that's the main funding through rates, but they also were borrowing money to do infrastructure works and so on around the area. We have anything up to 12 to 15 lanes going at one stage for various road works and what have you. and also for some of the council buildings like the Green Valley Library and Hall and what that.
Miller Library, you mean?
Yeah, Miller Library, yeah. Well, I suppose it was all Green Valley. I know it was spreading into suburbs such as Busby, Ashcroft, Sadlier and Miller. And probably now Miller is... They've dropped the name Green Valley completely and just...
Yeah, well, they deleted the name in 72.
Use the suburb names, and you've got the Michael Wendon Pool at Miller, and the Police Citizens Boys Club at Miller. But to me, that's always been Green Valley. I know they've changed the name, but when I was first associated with it, it was Green Valley.
Do you remember anything about, because I went to St. Therese Primary School, I'm just asking you, do you remember anything around any of the schools being built, or, I know they were privately funded, but...
No, not really. The only time I ever got to see the schools or go to the schools was when I was involved with Lions, and they had a Youth of the Year contest, and we used to go and see the headmaster or the person responsible for that came under the heading of public speaking and see him and get people to come to our contest for the Youth of the Year from the various schools in the area.
Let's talk about the bowling club here. When you were president, you told me an interesting story which I enjoyed. About you as a president and what you... But let's talk
about... I was secretary and manager of the club here for about 15 months. The original meeting for the bowling club was held in, I think, 1968 at Wellington Hall. And out of that they formed the first committee then they had built bowling greens. As a matter of fact, speaking of Jack Dudley donated the 3-acre land to the bowling club. And then they built greens, and they used to have Bob Randall, who was a soft drink manufacturer in the 40s from Liverpool. He used to run raffles and what have you to raise funds for the bowling club. And then a Gordon Cairnsdale, who was tied up with Viscount Caravans, came out and contributed to the original bowling club. It's changed a fair bit, and you said it had over the last couple of years and been all redone out, and it looks a real club, a real little club now, which is very pleasing to me. I served on the committee for a while, and then I became treasurer in 1978. The secretary and manager resigned, and I took over the position of secretary and manager. Lasted for 15 months. In that time, when I first took over, the actual revenue per month was $12,000 net from poker machines, whereas in the final month that I was here, the revenue had increased to $60,000. We were fortunate, but this was before the RBT came in, and people had come from the Oaks and all over the place to attend. We had live entertainment 6 nights a week and bingo on the 7th night, so there was some activity going on all the time at the club. Family called the Murrays owned the 3 acres next door, and I, somewhat foolishly when I look back, I had seen this as being the obvious outlet for expansion of a bowling club, and I had arranged to purchase that site for $65,000 and had teed up with the commercial banking company of Sidney Henry Thorne, who was prepared to finance the deal. But because I had not sought board approval, the board didn't see eye to eye with me and they let the golden chance slip by. And we parted company in towards the end of 1979.
Did you ever bowl yourself?
Yes, I bowled for about 6 or 7 years. I got my name up on the tournament board over there for three or four times. I was running up in the singles. I won the pairs with Dave Wistrich and the triples with Dave and his brother Bob, and also the fours. I think we won the fours 1 year. I haven't played bowls now. I played bowls, the last game I had was in 1985, but I now can't get down to play bowls as much as I would like to.
What do the shops look like? Where did you shop?
The shop started off with Ian Wilmington, who's got the hardware store now. Herbie Starr started that shop with his wife Evie, and that was the main shop, or the only shop in Austral. Then he sold that and he moved to the corner of, he moved to the corner of 10th and Edmonton Avenue and built another shopping centre there in the late 60s. Subsequent to that, he ran the two, and then his nephew Ian took over the hardware store. But that was the only store. The other thing that was there then was the post office. Herbie Starr was the actual postmaster, as had been his father before him. So his father would have been one of the first people to come out this way.
Was there quite a bit of horse and carts,
No, there wasn't really, no.
No ploughing with Clydesdales?
No, there was no ploughing. As a matter of fact, my father had a Howard rotary hose that he used to plough. He didn't drive it very much, but he had drivers driving it for him that he used to plough up the fields around Austral.
What sort of tractors did you use?
A Howard DH22 was the main one in those days. Because, you know, the farms were all starting out and they couldn't afford tractors, and Dad was able to buy this Howard tractor and cultivator and let it out to anyone that wanted to use it.
What happened with the egg business?
Well, Dad had a history of bad heart, and in about 1955, I think it was, he was pretty sick, and he just gradually scaled down the farm, and then he later sold it in... He built a house on the 14 acres adjoining the poultry farm and sold the farm and the land at the back to a McCormick. And he wasn't interested in the fowls at all, but Dad had scaled it right back in that time because of his ill health. And eventually that's what... He had a massive heart attack and died at the age of 49. My mother lived for another 30 odd years after Dad died.
So was that one of the motivations for you to stay in Austral with your mother?
Yeah, I stayed with my mother up until I was 40, as a matter of fact. And then I went north for a couple of years, and then I came back to Austral again. I was away for 2 years and came back in 86 and built another house on the back 3 acres of the land that my father had built on.
Where's the house today? Is it?
Both houses are still standing. We can go past the original house Dad built in 57. And the house that I built, it's in 11th Avenue on the top of the hill. That was the best part of the 15 acres. It was the highest part of the 15 acres, and I built right up the way.
So how do you feel today being here around Austral?
How do I feel? Well, I've always liked Austral. And I keep coming back here for one reason or another. I've been out two or three times in the last week out to the club here. And I feel good about there. Yeah, I feel better. Well, I like Foster. Foster's a laid-back area, whereas Liverpool and surrounds of go, where, you know, people in Foster get ready at 4:30 to knock off at 5:00. Then they are that laid back, and it's just different, and it's close to the water. Not that I live on the water, and not that I use the water that much, but it's all there, and it's a very pretty place.
So let's talk about the Lions Club.
I was in Apex from 1964 to 1975. I served as president of Liverpool Apex Club, which is now defunct. And in 75, I joined Lions. And I was president of Lions in, I think it was 2003 to 2004. I've always been service-minded, although I'm not in any club at present. I was in the club at Foster for a short period of time. Mainly in Apex, we were associated with holding a barbecue at Orland Park. John Allen, he was a promoter out there, and he let us, after the last race, have a barbecue area out there, which was a good money spinner. As president of Lions, I became friendly. The name escapes me, but we donated the money towards the Miller Scout Hall, which was a major project for the Apex Club. Well, Lions, I enjoyed my time in Liverpool Lions and served in most positions, and you know, I think service clubs are the backbone of any community, or many a community where you've got Rotary, Cradle, Lions, Lionesses, and so on.
What else do we want to talk about? We're going for a drive soon.
Yeah, okay.
And I think
We've covered
quite a bit, haven't we? We've done well.
Oh, there was other families in 13th Avenue, the Mills families, which the two brothers lived on the hillside of of 13th Avenue. They had. One had a farm, and the other one just lived and worked on for various people around the area.
Do you remember the nudist camp?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I nearly drowned in the nudist camp. The local school used to go down there and swim on the sports day in the swimming pool at the nudist colony. No, there was no nudist there, naturally. But the people that run the nudist camp allowed the local school to go down and use their pool one day a week, and I wasn't a great swimmer, and in those days, I must admit, one time I nearly drowned in the pool at the at the nudist camp.
How big was the pool? Was it a 25 metre or?
No, it was less than that. It was about 20 by about 12 was the pool, but it was better than nothing at all.
Do you know who ran the nudist camp?
I can't think of the name of the people now.
How in the hell did a nudist camp end up in Leppington?
I don't know. It's worse now.
Yes, well, we know what's there now.
It's the home of the level. There was another couple of names. Wally Trouch, he was a builder in Austral. He lived, built a place on the corner of 9th Avenue and Edmondson Avenue.
Is he still alive?
No, he's not, but his son is still alive. I don't know how he's still Trouch.
Yeah, I've got it written somewhere.
His son, and I think I mentioned Harold Watson that lived in 12th Avenue.
Much to do with Phil Costa?
With who?
Phil Costa? No, you probably... Did you ever...
No, I never had any.
Were you associated with the Leppington farming co-op there?
No, I wasn't, no.
What made you move into accountancy?
I don't know. I just, from the time I went to high school, I was more or less interested in becoming an accountant. My father was very good at figures, a lot better than I was. I used to rely on calculators and what have you, where he could calculate or add pages after page and just write the title down and it'd be spot on. But I think it was mainly because of that. And then when I went to Liverpool Council, I started off in the accounts department.
Was your father at Liverpool then?
No, he wasn't. He died in my final year of high school.
So did you recall any stories that your father might have told about council that you can talk about? Anything amusing or pertinent?
I never... The only story was about him, mainly because of his snoring and he could fall asleep at any time, and he used to go to the council and someone would get up and he would fall asleep at the council table and someone would get up and move a motion and he said, "You second the call?" And he said, "Yeah, that's right," and go on with the meeting. But that's about all I can remember.
What did you do for social life out here? Did you go to the movies?
Went to the Liverpool Regal Theatre. In Liverpool, which is now I think is a fitness centre or something, in Scott Street. And that was about it. I used to go down to Sydney every Saturday and stay at my grandmother's place and go out around the place with her two boys, and probably that continued up until I was probably in my 30s.
So you never married?
Yes, I've been married twice and divorced twice. I'm not married at present, but I married Piggy, who I first employed as a bookkeeper at the bowling club here. And a friendship developed out of that, and we got married later on after about 5 or 6 years.
What was her full name?
Vicky Ann Roy, R-O-Y. And then I married Inga in 1985, and she's still looking. She's my carer at present.
Do you have any children?
No, I never had any children myself. I stepchildren. Vicky had two children by previous marriage, and he had three children by previous marriages, but I never had any children myself.
What about sport?
I've played a lot of snooker. In those days, I used to play snooker at the RSL club, and we had our own snooker table at home where we, various people would come out and play, you know, not on a regular but on an irregular basis. We'd have five or six people or so on. Occasionally, when I was in Apex, I'd have a fundraising function at home. There was one other thing about the farm. My father built a big shed down there, which still is the only part of the original farm that's still standing. And you know, I think it was 1955, he had in conjunction with Ferrate, he had a big barnyard hop in the, where we had 400 people in this shed and raised a lot of money for Ferrate.
What sort of music were you playing there?
Rock and roll. And the one thing that they had was a jail, and if people would get nabbed and put in a jail for whatever, you know, they'd make up offences and then they'd have to buy themselves out by selling raffle tickets or what have you.
Wish I was there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the old Austral, you know, it was good.
When you're thinking of the Croatian community and some of the other migrant farmers, can you recall any, you know, what sort of dealings did you have with them?
Well, naturally, when you had so many poultry, there used to be the manure, and that used to be sold to the market gardeners around the place, like the Consistors and the Tillichers and so on, who used to come and clean up the yards and take or clean the sheds out, because it was good manure and it was all based on shavings and other things that was good for farming. And as I said, Consistor and Tillich were two of the names that readily come to mind as being purchasers of that manure.
Did you have any connection with any of the churches here?
Yes, I went to Sunday.
Sorry.
I went to Sunday school at Austral Church of Christ, and the principal teacher there was a Miss Argue, who lived up in 11th Avenue up towards the water race with a relative named Henry Adams. Henry was the mechanic in the area, probably the only mechanic in those days, that everybody used to go to him. Getting back to the Church of Christ, the minister was Harry Gowans, was the first minister that I was aware of with the Church of Christ on the corner of Edmondson and 11th Avenue.
What era are we talking about there?
Well, from 1945 to 55, really. The Gowans, he had a printing business in Bankstown or somewhere over that way. And his son, I still believe, still lives in Austral in Edmondson Avenue. So that's that.